Is there a deal or not? A top White House advisor said a trade agreement with China was over. Markets freaked. Then President Trump said otherwise. We'll tell you where things stand after a confusing series of events. Plus, primary elections in several states today could bring some new faces into power.
Because people are retiring, that has opened the gates wide to a number of people who aren't your traditional challengers.
A look at the key races and the impact of the pandemic on voting. And doctors, nurses, grocery store workers, we know their importance during the pandemic, but what about everyone else?
Around 60% of the workforce labeled non-essential. And I think that leads to questions for people about the purpose of their work and its relevance, especially at a time like this.
We'll reflect on a moment when many Americans are questioning the value of their own work. It's Tuesday, June the 23rd. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. Employment visas that companies depend on are now on hold. President Trump signed an order temporarily barring new immigrants on several types of employment visas. This includes the H-1B, which many tech companies use to bring in highly skilled workers. Business groups will likely challenge the move in court.
Hey, get out, get out, get out.
Demonstrators tried to bring down a statue of former President Andrew Jackson near the White House last night, leading to clashes with police. Authorities were blocking the statue and pushed the crowd back using batons. Protesters say authorities fired chemical irritants into the crowd. Saudi Arabia is putting strict limits on the Hajj pilgrimage next month to fight the spread of coronavirus. Normally drawing millions of Muslims from around the world, this year's event will be smaller and limited to those already inside Saudi Arabia. The kingdom is dealing with one of the largest confirmed COVID-19 outbreaks in the Middle East. And you'll likely hear the phrase, play ball once again, as Major League Baseball says it will impose an abbreviated 2020 season. Impose because the league and players couldn't agree on terms, so the commissioner is exercising his right to implement a season. It will likely be 60 games starting next month, followed by a normal postseason. Coming up, why new questions on America's trade deal with China are moving the markets. President Trump took to Twitter late last night to say a trade deal with China is still happening. The 10:22 p.m. message came after markets dipped following White House trade advisor Peter Navarro taking this question on Fox News.
There had been progress made on that trade deal, but given everything that's happened and all the things you just listed, is that over?
It's over, yes. I think that...
The Chinese embassy didn't respond to our request for comment. We talked to our markets editor, Quinton Webb, in Hong Kong to explain how investors are digesting all of this.
Well, we saw a bit of a brief sell-off in the markets on Monday night. U.S. stock futures fell, treasury bonds rallied, oil fell as well, as did some Asian markets. That was quickly corrected, but it did show that people were surprised at the idea that the phase one trade deal agreed only in January and only taking effect in February was off after all. The US and China have to some extent been able to kind of keep some of these different issues separate. So they're at loggerheads over Hong Kong and things like technology supremacy issues. You know, only last week we had Robert Lighthizer, another very senior White House trade supremo, saying that the trade deal was very much on. And if you cast your mind back to before the coronavirus pandemic erupted, of course, the ebbs and flows of that trade relationship between the US and China, the world's two biggest economies, was of major concern to investors. And I think on Monday night, there was a sort of slight resurgence of that concern.
Several key states hold primaries today, and the results will help set the tone for November's general election. Our J.R. Whalen talked to the Journal's congressional reporter, Siobhan Hughes.
Three states are holding primaries today. So, Siobhan, let's start in New York. What races are you watching?
New York has a number of very interesting races, but chief among them is one in which House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Elliot Engel, who is the eighth most senior Democrat in the House, he's running against Democrat Jamal Bowman, who founded a middle school in the East Chester neighborhood of the Bronx. This could be, at least according to progressives, the race that replicates what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez did 2 years ago when she toppled Joe Crowley, who was then the fourth-ranking House Democrat. Mr. Bowman is a progressive. He's backed by the progressive wing of the party. And the racial justice movement has greatly elevated his profile, partly because Mr. Engel made a big gaffe when, during a rally against racism, he had a hot mic moment in which he was heard saying basically that if it weren't for the fact that he had a primary, he wouldn't care whether he spoke or not. And that was viewed as callous and maybe insensitive and something that did not help in a district that includes the Bronx, and that, in fact, is a majority-minority district. This is a trend, incumbents being taken on by progressives.
Wow, the members of Congress that have announced they're retiring has really changed up the playing field.
That's right. Because people are retiring, that has opened the gates wide to a number of people who aren't your traditional challengers. There's nobody who's necessarily anointed, and it's also meant that the progressive movement, which has really had a rather good track record over the past couple of years, sees no reason not to jump in and take on more establishment-oriented candidates.
Now let's talk about Kentucky. Here we've got a matchup between two top Democrats in the Senate primary who are vying to face off against Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell in the fall. What can you tell us about candidates Amy McGrath and Charles Booker?
Amy McGrath is a former Marine fighter pilot who is the hand-picked candidate of the Democratic Party. The Democrats are so intent on toppling Mitch McConnell that she's become a magnet for money. She's raised more than $40 million and until a few weeks ago was widely thought to have this race locked up. Then along came a progressive state senator named Charles Booker. His profile was raised hugely during protests in Louisville, where a young black woman had been killed by police, not really so far away from the time when George Floyd was killed in Minneapolis. And Mr. Booker became a star, not just through his speaking, but through his ability to project those images out over social media. He quickly started drawing a lot of money. He raised something like $2 million in 2 weeks after raising only $750,000 during the first section of the campaign. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez endorsed him. Elizabeth Warren endorsed him. His momentum was so great that instead of saving her money for the race against Mitch McConnell, Amy McGrath has been forced to spend millions of dollars just to keep her hopes alive.
And then in Virginia, there's a House race that's caught a lot of attention.
There's a very interesting House race in Virginia's 5th District. One of the candidates there is a doctor named Cameron Webb, who is a former advisor to the Obama administration. He also happens to be African American. The fact that he is gaining so much attention in this majority white district, which typically elects white representatives, could underscore a continued liberal shift in Virginia politics, and more broadly, nationally, it could suggest the tipping point for white voters, in which white voters, at least on the Democratic side, are more willing to accept minority candidates as their representatives.
A number of primaries were postponed because of the coronavirus pandemic, and there's still some concern about whether they'll be able to pull it off today. What challenges are states and voters still facing to get to the polls?
There are three major challenges. Number one, at the on-site polls, a lack of workers. People are not eager to be in crowds during a pandemic, and so there's a constraint there. There's also the issue of a lack of polling stations. Kentucky dramatically slashed the number of polling stations that would be available in order to protect voters from the pandemic, but the consequence is that in places like Jefferson County, home to Louisville, which has about half of the state's African American voters, there will be only a single polling station. And then finally, access to mail-in ballots. States say they've sent out piles of mail-in ballots to folks. Some people claim they haven't received them. There's also the question of whether or not the mail is going to function adequately enough. Ballots must be postmarked by specific dates in order to be counted. And so it's not hard to imagine a certain amount of chaos, or at a minimum, difficulty in tabulating results and ensuring that people feel good and confident in those results.
Now, regarding the lack of polling stations in Louisville, were there legal challenges to that?
There was a court challenge, but the courts ruled that Kentucky was on solid grounds with the number of polling stations it had because it had also made arrangements for expanded absentee voting and early voting.
That was R.J.R. Whalen talking to the Journal's Siobhan Hughes. And finally, the pandemic introduced us to this concept of non-essential and essential workers. We know essential workers are the ones on the front lines and, in many cases, the ones who save lives. As we watch them work, it's also prompting some of us to think about the work we do now and the legacy we leave behind. It's a topic the Wall Street Journal's workplace reporter Lauren Weber recently tackled.
Well, I had some interesting conversations with people who purposely went into certain occupations or certain industries because it provided a certain amount of meaning, like sustainable energy or different kinds of consulting work, nonprofit work. And, you know, I think the pandemic, not only in terms of being labeled non-essential, but many people also felt helpless at the time, you know, that a lot of people wanted to be doing more to help others or be of service, and their jobs weren't necessarily the vehicle for that. So I think that became a question of really looking deeply at the substance of work, not so much, does my work matter? In taking it all together, I think this has been a time of enormous reckoning for people personally and on broader levels as well. So I think a lot of people are just having a lot of reflection right now about the meaning and substance of their jobs.
If you're asking some of these questions, Lauren's piece has some personal stories from workers around the country, including their advice. That's on WSJ.com. And that's what's news for this morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. We're back with another new episode this evening. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.